The format of tonight's meeting is two 10-minute speakers, the first of which will speak on the third tradition, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker to share on the third tradition is Christian.
Hi, I'm Christian. I'm an alcoholic. All right. Thank you to Adam for asking me to speak on the tradition. I was really actually excited to speak on this, which I can't believe I'm uttering those words, but in all honesty, I'm going to be really excited to stop rehearsing this in my head after I'm done. Literally in one scenario, I took a bow after the end, and it's horrible. So I am here to speak on the third tradition, and if you're new, I apologize if I say that a lot tonight, but the third tradition is especially important if you are new. So we have the steps and the traditions, and the steps are the work that we individually do to get in touch with a higher power and get over the obsession of alcohol and really get a bridge back to life. And the traditions are the work that the group has to do really to ensure our unity. And basically what that means is just to make sure we don't fall apart. The traditions, from what I've learned, did not just, get conceived out of a brilliant idea. They really came from a lot of trial and error. And, if you think about it, it's basically a miracle that we're all just sitting here calmly having this meeting. I mean, me as an alcoholic, I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot, and I'm full of, self-centered fear and character defects, and if I'm in a room with a bunch of other people who are extreme examples of self-will run riot, it could, literally be a riot, and it's not, though, because we, as a group, and, especially this group, we practice the traditions. Tradition three, and I'm going to read the long form, which is, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. I told Bob I'm going to just read this, three times, and I'll be done. So the first part of that tradition historically, came from the fact that, in the beginning, in the late 30s, once AA started to get some momentum, the founders started to kind of see some suspicious characters coming into the meetings. And they, they were a little concerned. They didn't want, the reputation of AA to be tarnished, and they wanted only a certain type of person in AA. It says in the 12 and 12, we were resolved to admit nobody to AA but that hypothetical class of people we termed pure alcoholics. So beggars, tramps, asylum inmates, prisoners, queers, plain crackpots, and fallen women were definitely out. I also had, so many jokes lined up about that, but honestly, I don't need to make one. If you look around, everyone in this room probably falls into at least one of those categories. So, clearly the times have changed, but, so the AA, the foundation office, would ask for all of the membership regulations of each group to be sent in. And at one point, they realized, if all of these membership rules, were enforced at the same time, no one would be allowed into AA. It's who are we to judge, who is to get sober or not? I mean, that's really the basis of this. And, once they really realized, if they were going to be practicing spiritual principles, they had to stop being the judge, in order to give someone the best chance they could to get sober, they had to let that person decide if they were an alcoholic or not, And so, literally, this is, the easiest membership in New York City. It's the person's decision, whether or not they want to stop drinking. It's if I come through the doors and I don't want to drink, like, boom, I am a member. If I decide I want to go drink, you know, it's like membership denied. If I want to come back the very next day, membership reinstated. Like, it's like that's it, you know? And, like, from a personal level, like, you know, like, who am I to judge anyone in here? Like, I know where I came from, and, like, I was just, you know, like a sad, crazy drunk. Like, I blacked out at church on Christmas. You know, like, one time I got so drunk I fell on the ice and broke some ribs because I was chasing a submarine sandwich. Like, I can't be the judge, you know, of anyone. The next part of the tradition, which says, nor ought AA membership ever depend on money or conformity. Like, this is really big for me because, like, you know, like, people that come into these rooms, like, some have a lot and some have a little. Like, I did not have a job. I mean, I, like, was waiting tables one brunch a week, and I spilled a martini on my hand, and it was over. And so I was just, like, I felt like I didn't belong, you know? I was, like, not in the land of the living, and I also just, like, couldn't trust myself out and, you know. So I came into here, like, I know what this meeting looks like. You know, it's like this huge room, and everyone looks super good, and it's like a weird church party, and it's like, you know, it's like there are definitely, like, some fur coats and gold watches up in here, and, like, it's cute. Like, it's really good, but, like, underneath it all, like, everyone is working really hard to put this meeting on so that newcomers have a place to go. You know, that's really the truth of it. And, like, just remember, like, everyone here is an alcoholic. Like, I am an alcoholic. I'm lucky I'm up here, like, even speaking English right now. But, like, you know, it's fine, you know. So just remember, like, if you think that you have to change or conform to something, you don't. Like, that's what this tradition says. Like, you don't have to change anything. So, you know, just, like, come in here and be you. And it's, like, totally fine if you're sick and suffering, and that's better because, like, the rest of us, you know, operate on a much higher level if we have someone to help, and that's really the truth. So the final part of this tradition I really don't have time to get into, but it's any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. But really, you know, like, it just ensures that, you know, an AA group is an AA group first. So with, like, a couple minutes left, I mean, let's see here. There is a checklist that I found from the Grapevine that basically is a really good gauge of how well I'm practicing this tradition, you know, individually, and I won't read it all, but just a couple. This one's really funny for some reason. In my mind, do I prejudge some new AA members as losers? I mean, like, you know, it's funny to me because, like, what if I did that? Like, am I the AA winner? Like, did I win here? You know, it's like we are all the same. Like, my first sponsor would always say, you know, there are no cool kids in AA, and that is true. Am I overimpressed by a celebrity? 1,000%, yes. You know, can I treat a new member simply and naturally as one more sick human the rest of us? You know, these are just, like, really good examples and a really good way for me to remember how to be open-minded, and I can, like, take this outside of the rooms and all of my relationships. You know, and I just have to remember, like, I am not God. Like, I can't decide the face that's going to walk through the doors. And so, like, you know, I just have to be open to helping the one that does. You know, that's all I have to do. So in closing, I just wanted to read a nice quote from Bill W. on the traditions. He says, so long as the ties which bind us together prove far stronger than those which would divide us if they could, all will be well. We shall be secure as a movement. Our essential unity will remain a certainty. Thanks.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Julie.
Hi, my name's Julie, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to just thank everyone for being here. My higher power, please let me just help anyone that's sick and suffering and having a hard time today. Atlanta Group's my home group. My sobriety date is September 22nd, 2016. I have a sponsor. She has a sponsor. I've been through the steps. I'm not currently sponsoring, but I'm available. So I'll just start with my first drunk. I was 15, and it was Christmas, and my friend and I were drinking peach schnapps out of teacups. And it was super fun, super tasty, super messy. I went outside and made snow angels. I grew up in New Hampshire. I was in the snow in my clothes. I went home and I got sick. I made a huge embarrassment in front of my parents, and my body, it's just never been able to handle alcohol, and I did not learn then, and it took me a long time of experimenting with that. Throughout high school, I continued to drink off and on, and when I was in college, I got in a really, really bad car accident, and that was the first time I was introduced to AA. I was 20 years old, but I honestly thought it was a joke. I remember a woman talking about putting rubbing alcohol through bread and drinking it, and I was like, that's not me, you know? And so I continued on my journey of wreaking havoc, causing chaos throughout my 20s. And when I was 30, I moved to New York. And at that point, I had no one telling me what to do. I got here. I was able to go out and do whatever I wanted, and I thought I was handling things okay. And then there got a certain point that I hit a wall. My living situation, like, it just crumbled. I got depressed, and my solution was to just stay inside and drink. And for about a year and a half, I drank about a liter of vodka a day. And it was a struggle. It was a struggle to stop. I didn't understand what alcoholism was. I would talk to people about, like, wanting to stop and quitting, but I didn't know where to go. Then it was, December 2011, I was up at my parents' house, and I got a DWI. I crashed my mom's car, and it took me another 8 months from then to go into a hospital to try and get into a detox, and I still didn't know about AA, and so I got out, I drank, went to another detox, got out, drank, cycle repeated itself. Finally, I went to my first rehab in January of 2013, and I was introduced to AA. It was, like, looking back, it was the greatest blessing ever to be in a place for 4 weeks and have a meeting brought in every night. And when I was there, someone from this group had brought a meeting in, and they brought me to my first Atlanta Group meeting in 2013. I'd love to say I got sober then, but my sober date's 2016. So in a nutshell, it took me 15 detoxes and 4 rehabs. And then in September, well, I have a 2-year-old, a son that will be 2 in a month. And before he was born, I was in fear. I was in fear of doing my 4-step. I didn't want to get into the emotions. I had been through one before, and I didn't do it. And when he was 3 months old, I relapsed. I had not been to AA. And then when he was 5 months old, he was removed from my custody. And it took the government telling me, you need to get sober, for me to actually get over the fear of doing the steps. Like, this simple program, I was in so much fear overdoing this program and getting down to the root of the causes that, you know, I drank and I was putting my child in danger. So what I did was I came back to Atlanta Group. That Wednesday, I went to the Big Book meeting. I continued coming to meetings. 2 weeks later, I heard my current sponsor speak. Thank you. And, you know, some of her story clicked with mine, and I was like, I need that woman to sponsor me. I'm going to cry. Because of this woman and her solid program, you know, I have my son today. A year ago, I didn't have custody. I got him back March 15th last year, so it will be almost a year. But what happened in that time when I didn't have him was my faith grew stronger. I had to overcome my fear. I mean, losing my child is my biggest fear. Seriously, going through the steps of AA, my biggest fear? No. We got through the steps in 90 days. Looking back, it wasn't a plan. We weren't like, we're going to get through the steps in 90 days, but we did. My first step, it was the first time I did it this way. It was amazing. It was a drunkalogue. All my consequences were pointed out to me, and there was a lot. That's something I review before I speak now is my first step. My second step, I have the biggest God. I swear, my God is so huge. He surrounds me, you know? And when I did my second step this time, I call my higher power God. And he's just like my homeboy that walks with me, walks through it, talks to me, picks me up, and that I can confide in. You know, he's that guy. There's nobody else because it's the greatest love and the greatest protector. And when I'm in fear about anything, I just have to remember, you know, God's got my back, and he's got it, and he's going to take care of it. And then, you know, step three, turning my will over, was continuing and doing my step four, which I was in fear over. I put it off, and I remember my sponsor telling me, listen, I made time for you. You need to get it done. It's got to be done in 2 weeks. You know, I was thinking that I needed to sit there and do my resentments at a table, but I started writing them on the subway, doing three or four at a time to get them done. And I did my fifth step, and then I did my sixth step, and then seven, eight, and nine, and I'm still continuing to make amends. I have a lot of them to do. But the biggest difference between 2013 and 2016 was I was willing. You know, I had to get over my fear. Like today, I choose faith. Faith is a lot easier to walk in. Faith will carry me through. Faith will relieve my anxiety. Fear cripples me. It's my, you know, guilt. It's my anger. It's my sadness. It's everything put in one. And what do? I quiet that with alcohol or something else, you know, no matter what. But with faith, it's like today I can choose better choices. I can enrich my life. I can listen to, like, meditations. I can listen to worship music. I can listen to positive things on the radio or make phone calls to women. You know, that gets me through. I had a really yucky weekend, and, you know, when I'm in those situations, I just try to pick up my phone and I try to call women and be like, how are you doing? What's going on with you, to get out of my head? Because if I think about my stuff, I'm just going to, like, swirl deeper into quicksand, you know? And I don't need that. I need to be able to, you know, keep picking myself up and help picking other people up. And, you know, there is a solution, and it's AA. That's why I kept coming back. March 2013, that was the Thursday night, was my first Atlantic Group meeting. I got sober, hopefully for the last time and continuously, September 2016. You know, it was 3.5 years I was coming in and out, in and out. I felt like I was a revolving door. But I knew it worked. Everybody in here that's been here taking a seat, you know, I thank you. You've kept me coming back, like seeing the hope, knowing it's here. You know, hope, I've heard, is hearing other people's experience. You keep coming back, you're going to hear something. You're going to hear someone's experience. You're going to hear their strength. You're going to hear their solution. And hopefully you can, you know, keep it up and stick to it and stay sober. Because I'll tell you, having a drink and losing a child or going to jail or rehab over and over again, it's not worth it. Like, it's a lot better coming to meetings and having amazing sober friends. So thank you.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Paul. I'm an alcoholic, and it's good to be here, and it's good to be sober, and I want to thank the Atlantic Group for giving me the opportunity to come in here and do service tonight. It's a great honor and a great privilege, you know, and I see some familiar faces here and some new faces. It's good to see the new faces. Alcoholics Anonymous is one of the few places in the world that I know of that you can walk into a room full of strangers and start reminiscing, you know. And we might not drink together, but we certainly know what it's like, you know. And I came in with a few guys here from Rockaway Beach. I don't know if you know Rockaway Beach. It's affectionately known as Cirrhosis by the Sea. And they got quite a few alcoholics there, you know. The legal age to drink is 4'11". And but it's so good to be here, and I want to thank the speakers. It was good to hear Julian Christian, and it's good to be here. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about how it was and what happened, and how it is today. And I know this may come as a shock to some people here tonight, but I'm not from the neighborhood originally, you know. And it's about 30 years now since I left my native Cuba, and I'm from Northern Ireland, just outside of Belfast, and the sort of neighborhood I came from, if you didn't drink, you moved. Everybody drank. I didn't know anybody that didn't drink, you know. And just speaking from an Irish person, it's so good to see people here tonight. There's people in this room tonight that I really, really care for deeply. And for a guy like me, that shows you the growth I've made in Alcoholics Anonymous. Before I came to AA, I was a bit like the Irish man who loved his wife so much he almost told her, you know. And so I've certainly grown in Alcoholics Anonymous. And just as a side note, maybe you're sitting out there tonight and maybe you're not laughing. Maybe you're saying, Paul, I backed myself into a corner I can't get out of. I'm in a trap I can't spring. I don't know if you can see my face, but I'm not laughing. I want to tell you, I'm not here to sell Alcoholics Anonymous here tonight. It's a program of attraction, not promotion. But I'll tell you this. I don't mean cash and prizes. You cannot get where I am tonight from where I came from without Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's an impossible journey. And I know how the movie goes, but I wouldn't miss it. To see somebody, the new people here tonight, walking in the worst night of their life. And it is not the grace of God when you walk in here in the worst night of your life and you're given the grace not to drink. And it's so much more than grace. It's mercy. And the definition of mercy that I like the best is entering into the chaos of another person's life. And in August of 1992 in my life, when everybody, and there wasn't many, was going that way, the only people coming this way was Alcoholics Anonymous. And they carried this message. My message might even keep me sober. They carried this message. And for the people that are new here tonight, what is the message we have on offer in Alcoholics Anonymous? When complete defeat through alcohol, which you're experiencing now, step one. I got a body that won't let me drink and a mind that won't let me stop. One drink creates a thirst I can't quench. When I control my drinking, I don't enjoy it. And when I enjoy my drinking, I can't control it. With your help, I haven't had a drink since August of 1992, but I hope I don't forget this. One drink tonight, destination unknown. When complete defeat through alcohol meets what you were said here earlier, what is Alcoholics Anonymous? It's hope in human form. People get people sober. I haven't seen God at a meeting yet, but I know he's here. And the conduit that he uses to spread his love and grace is the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. So maybe you're sitting out there tonight saying, Paul, I'm in a trap I can't spring. I want to tell you what Alcoholics Anonymous told me. You hear that metaphor, you go 10 miles into the forest, you got to go 10 miles out. I don't believe that in AA. I don't care how deep and how dark and how painful the forest that you're in may seem. Alcoholics Anonymous tells me, and I will tell you, you're just 12 steps away from a new life. That's all. Just 12 steps away from a brand new life in Alcoholics Anonymous. People say, oh, I came to AA and I got my life back. I don't want my life back. It sucked. I had it for 30 years. I could do nothing with it. I got a whole brand new life in Alcoholics Anonymous. Are there people in my life from the old drinking days? Absolutely. But things are different today. Where was I before? Like it says in the days of wine and roses, I was lost on a sea of booze. And if it was any coordinates, it was pain and misery. And every once in a while, I'd wash up on dry land. Because alcoholics were great starters, getting things going again. But everything was always built on sand. And the first drink would always arrive, and I'm washed out to sea with more debris. Because of these people and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, my world is built on concrete today. I'm not here to sell this program, as I said there, but this is one of the few places I know where you get the ability to live two lives in one lifetime. Don't get me wrong. It's a daily reprieve, not a pardon. People say, oh, I'm just an arm's length away from a drink, and I suppose that's true. But because of your help, I'm 12 steps away from a drink. And that's a quantum leap from when I first walked into AA. But don't get me wrong. I don't think they're 12 steps up to anything. They're 12 steps down to humility. I've seen people drink again in AA that I thought would never drink. And that tells me, as I said, it's a daily reprieve, not a pardon. But I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything I needed to know, I found out at my first meeting of AA. My name is Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. That tells me who I am, what I am, where I am, and what I need to be doing. And if I know that, I'm all right. And when I'm all right, everything around me is all right too, even if it's not. Maybe you're sitting out there tonight, and you heard the steps being read, and traditions, and it all seems like a foreign language. We have a symbol in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a triangle inside a circle. And there's three parts to it. Unity, service, and recovery. I believe this. I believe it so much that I bet my life on a daily basis. I believe from your very first meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous, you can put all three parts of that triangle into your life. Unity. We do together what I can't do alone. Many meetings make it easy, few make it hard, none make it impossible. I need you and you need me, and that's okay by me. There's one lifeboat called Alcoholics Anonymous. My disease would tell me, get your own lifeboat. The HMS Paul McHugh. My disease would tell me, you could swim to shore. It's not that far. I got to stay in the lifeboat of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's none of my business who's sitting next to me. Gender, color, creed, none of my business. It is my business if I'm willing to put my hand out and help that person or be helped by that person. For that, I am responsible. Service. One of our speakers had passed away a few years ago. She said, the highest pay grade in Alcoholics Anonymous is servant. Why? Because of the nature of this disease, I am shackled to self. My holy trinity is always me, me, me. I know you're out there, but I can't see you because there's so much of me in the way. So if you put away one more chair, it's hard to do in here, but if you put away one more chair than the one you sat on, they told me, congratulations, you're doing service in Alcoholics Anonymous. Recovery. Maybe the 12 steps and 12 traditions seem like a foreign concept. We have slogans in AA. Easy does it. Live and let live. One day at a time. They were like the banisters to the steps. Now I'm here to tell you from practical experience, not in the theoretical. You can stay dry in two parts of the triangle. I've done it. You can even stay dry on one part of the triangle. I've done that too. But if I want to get free from the one guy I could never get free from, which is me, and live in the one place I could never live, which is right here, right now, I got to put all three parts into my life, and I got to do it every day. But it's a small price. The only way that I coast in AA is downhill. But it's a small price to pay for the life I've been given. As I said, you cannot get where I am today from where I came from without Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, why am I an alcoholic? I used to get a lot of mental gymnastics when I first came to AA. Why did I become an alcoholic? Where did I become an alcoholic? When did I become an alcoholic? You know the old alcoholic conundrum? What came first, the chicken or the keg? You know, and there's a few guys that got drunk trying to figure that one out. I have no idea. Was I a symptom looking for disease? I have no idea. But I'll tell you what I do know. There's been two turning points in my life that were so clear, like the line between these seats. The first one was taking a drink, and the second one was walking in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I realize now, both times, I was looking for the same thing. Carl Jung, the psychoanalyst who was a great friend of early AA, said that alcoholism can be characterized as a low-grade spiritual thirst. I was looking for something, even before I took drink. For whatever reason, and I don't care today, I had this hole in my soul. And I tried to fill it with booze and people and places and things. Trying to grow. Nature always grows from the inside out. I was trying to grow from the outside in. And I had some symbolic victories along the way, but nothing of any permanence. And the shame would wear off things so quickly. Oh, this is it. This, no, that's not it either. No, this is definitely a relationship, a job, or whatever. It's no coincidence I'm standing in America with an Irish accent. I was a runner, a long-distance runner. Always looking for an outside fix for what's really an inside job. You get to AA, the first 90 days, you find out it's an inside job, but you couldn't have told me that. So I took that drink when I was 14 or 15 years of age. As I said, that low-grade spiritual thirst. And it took off all the rough edges. It filled in all the holes. It made me be everything I thought you wanted me to be. And for a chronic people pleaser like me with low self-esteem, it was a magic elixir. But I made a Faustian bargain. I made a deal with the devil. Charles Dickens, there at Christmas, which was a few months ago, had that book of Christmas Carol, and they had the ghost of the past and the present and the future. If the ghost of my alcoholic future had come along when I took that first drink and said, I want to show you something. Look in that window. You see that guy drinking around the clock against his own will? You see that guy who's pushed away everybody that mattered in his life? You see that guy who has got quicksand stretched all around him? That's you in 15 years. I wouldn't have believed you. I'd have said, you must be thinking of somebody else. But that's exactly what happened to me. I'm not a violent man. But if another man had done to me what drink did to me, I'm not a violent man. I only ever had one bar fight, and that was a draw. Although most people watching said that she won, you know. But we'll move quickly on, you know. But if another man had done to me, as I said there, but alcohol being that rubacious creditor, if you're new here tonight, it'll take your job, it'll take your car, it'll take your partner, it'll take your spouse, it'll take the shirt off your back. But what does it really want? It wants me 6 feet under. There's a lot of terminal diseases out there. I'm not familiar with those, but I'm familiar with this one. Alcoholism will kill me stone dead with or without drinking my body. I don't need booze in my body to destroy my life. I almost did it in AA with untreated alcoholism. Because I wouldn't accept these spiritual principles. But you couldn't have told me that. I took that first drink, black and white to color, in one drink. Most people drink. I was in the bar business for years. Most people drink because what alcohol does to them. Our book talks about it. A sense of conviviality, a fired imagination, a social lubricant. I drink because what alcohol does for me. I'm sorry, what alcohol does to me. It does something for me that it doesn't do for the normal or heavy drinker. It takes the stone out of the shoe, the knot out of the stomach, fills in all the holes. So I'm coming back for more because of what it does for me. As I said there, my life fell apart in short order. I'm getting my stomach pumped out on a school night when I'm 15. My parents don't know what to do with me. I'm growing up in Northern Ireland during the Troubles. Things are bad. Before I'm out of my teens, I'm a daily drinker. Before I'm out of my teens, I'm taking morning drink. And it got worse, and it got worse, and it got worse. But the good news is, for the people that are new here tonight, sobriety's progressive too. And as far down as you go with drink, you can come back up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not going to stand up here like some snake oil salesman and promise you the moon and the stars. There's things I lost through drinking, and they're not coming back. There's things you may have lost through drinking, and they're not coming back either. Thank God for this program. Who among us could live with the guilt and the shame and remorse of our drinking if it wasn't for the 12 steps to alleviate that. I wasn't a sociopath. I knew the bridges I burned, the damage I did, the doors I slammed, and the people I walked away from. Thank God I had that program of AA. I can't change the past, but I was able to change my perception on the past and make amends to people. But I had a bit more drinking to do. As I said, there is no coincidence. I'm standing here. I'm such a grandstand. I was blaming Northern Ireland. I'm a working-class Catholic from the wrong side of the tracks outside of Belfast during the Troubles. I had a big chip on my shoulder. In fact, when I got to AA, a guy says to me, "You know something? You're a well-balanced guy." And I thought to myself, finally somebody knows what's going on around here, you know? He says, "Yeah, you got a chip on both shoulders. You know, I hated everything, hated everybody, could always find the needle in the haystack. So I'm blaming Northern Ireland, can't get a break. I come home to my father, typical alcoholic grandstander. I said to my father, "Sit down, I got some bad news for you." He says, "What is it?" I said, "I'm going to America, and don't try and talk me out of it." He says, "Talk you out of it, I'll help you pack when you're leaving, you know. On you go, Columbus, you know." Just for the newcomers here tonight, I don't know if they realize that little known fact that Columbus was actually an alcoholic. It's not very well known, but when you think about it, he must have been an alcoholic. Because when he set off on his journey, he didn't know where he was going. When he got there, he didn't know where he was. When he came back, he didn't know where he had been. And he got a woman to pay for the trip, not once, but twice, you know. So you know he must have been an alcoholic. Anyway, I digress. So I came over here to America and I could finally drink the way that I wanted to drink, which was like an animal. And I ended up on Rockaway Beach. I ended up working as a bartender. I used to work in this crazy bar from 6 at night to 4 in the morning. I'm drinking before I went to work. I worked in this crazy bar. This bar had it all. Alcoholics, drug addicts, degenerate gamblers. And that was just the staff. That wasn't even the customers, you know. And forget about ladies' night. Most of the women that came into that bar looked like they did their makeup on a trampoline, you know what I mean? It's like over here and over here. But water finds its own level, and so do alcoholics, and I fitted in like a glove. I've experienced every form of drinking, I think. I was a weekend drinker as a kid, a daily drinker, a morning drinking. But by I'm 25, I'm starting to hit hospitals, convulsions and seizures. I'm starting to do what it says in chapter 3 in our book. This will be a perfect time of the year. I'll stop for Lent. I'll stop for this. I'll stop for that. I'm putting axes on calendars. But I could stop, but I couldn't stay stopped. If you hear nothing else tonight, you know what Alcoholics Anonymous give me that I never had? It give me something between me and the first drink. If you're new, get something between you and the first drink. Get something. I have something between me and the first drink. I didn't have that. Before I came to AA, the thought of a drink would become the obsession to drink, an idea that crowds out all other ideas, and I would find myself drinking. And once the clock started ticking on that sequence of events, I had no way of stopping the clock. I have today because I've used people. And this program, and this fellowship of unity, service, and recovery. As I said there, my life's falling apart. I almost went to the grave thinking I had a drinking problem. I found out in AA that a drinking problem is solved by not drinking. Our book talks about it. It gives two examples, a medical reason or a romantic reason, and those people can stop or even moderate. But then it talks about us. What about the real alcoholic? I didn't realize until I got to AA that I suffered from alcoholism. And that's a horse of a different color. It's physical and mental and spiritual. And in my case, wrapped up in a body full of sick, childish emotions. Not drinking is a start, but it's just a brief start. Alcohol is only mentioned the first half of the first step. I needed the other 11 and a half steps to help me do what I can't do drunk or without drink, and that's live out there in God's world under his conditions rather than my demands. I'll give you one vignette that just sums this up. I'm in a bar drinking. I've been on this bad drunk. I collapsed in the bar in an alcoholic seizure. I woke up in Peninsula Hospital in Rockaway in a restraining sheet. I've been strapped down for drink before. They give me some Librium to get me down off the ceiling. There was a woman standing at the bedside who was close to me at that time in my life. I wasn't trying to be cinematic, but I took her hand when they took the cuffs off, and I said to her, I don't know why I can't drink, but it's obvious I can't drink, and I will never, ever drink again. If you got a contract, I would have signed it with my own blood. A friend of mine, Bob, says, if they'd have put you on a lie detector machine, you would have passed with flying colors. Because I meant that. Not at an intellectual level, at a visceral level. I'm done. It's over. But I left that hospital. I didn't have unity. I didn't have service. I didn't have recovery. I didn't know what the problem was, step one. I didn't know what the solution was, step 12. You people, hope in human form. One more time, it was just me against the first drink. Up in this moment in time tonight, March of 2018, I have never beaten an obsession to drink. I've gotten into the ring many times. It's like getting into the ring with a heavyweight champion. A child could say, don't get in the ring. But don't get in the ring means don't take the first drink. And I don't know how not to take the first drink. So what do? I get back in the ring and I tell myself the epitaph of the alcoholic. Perhaps you can identify. It'll be different this time. I'll watch it. It was her. It was him. It was this. It was that. I take the first drink and I'm off on the well-known spree that the book talks about. This didn't happen once or twice in my life. This happened so many times in my life. And finally, as the book says, beaten into a sense of reasonableness. I was brought here courtesy of an old-fashioned 12-step call from two guys from the old South Bronx group. They had a mantra, we don't give up on anybody. And thank God they didn't give up on me. Thank God for the 12th step of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think Bill Wilson got that. I believe he was divinely inspired up in that hospital not too far from here in Central Park West when he had that divine idea. I wonder if I can stay sober by trying to help another person get sober. It was the spark that changed everything for us. We can trace that moment in time to this moment in time. We didn't have a 12th step, but before Bill Wilson even left the hospital, he wanted to talk to the other patients and share experience, strength, and hope. Thank God for that 12th step. Because you know something? You know what an 11-step program is for a guy like me? It's nothing more than a self-help program. It's a highly evolved self-help program. But it's a self-help program. The 12th step completes that spiritual circuit. I need you and you need me. Thank God for those two men that came to my house that day. And they talked about them, but I found out about me. And they brought me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank God there wasn't a guy standing at a clipboard saying, why don't you check the box for what you want? I would have checked the box for not drinking and would have been delighted with that. And once again, I was shortchanged myself because I got so much more besides. I got me back, I got you back, and I got him back, and it lost a whole lot. After that first meeting, someone met me and they said, well, I said, I've found something, like was said earlier on by Julie. I didn't know what it was at the time. I know today what it was. It was hope. Hope in human form. Used people helping me. I came into AA and I'd like to tell you that I took the ball and scored a touchdown, but I came in here, our book talks about having old ideas. Letting go absolutely of all your old ideas. I carried a lot of old ideas into AA, barroom mentality. I shied away, like was said earlier on, from this program. The steps seemed very touchy, very feely, very warm and fuzzy. I'm Irish, stoic, don't tell nobody nothing. I'm here to tell you, You can fool them at the coffee pot at 7:30 at night. I've done it. How's it going, Paul? Oh, it's going wonderful. You know when this disease comes to visit me? 2 o'clock in the morning. Could've, should've, would've, guilt, shame, remorse, another sleepless night in sobriety. I'm 2.5 years off a drink. I didn't owe any money when I got in here. 2.5 years off drink. I'm thousands upon thousands of dollars in debt, and I know why today. I'm still trying to fill that hole in my soul with outside stuff. A bad jacket, feel good for a half an hour, but I always end up back at the same equation. Me on me, and I can't get me off of me. I'm shackled to self by the nature of this disease. The only thing that's going to break that bondage of self is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And finally, beaten into a sense of reason, I've been the jumping off place twice in my life. Once with drink, and once with no drink and no program. Different type of pain. But boy, painful nonetheless. And against my better judgment, in fact, everything that's helped me in AA has been against my better judgment. I got into the causes and effects of my drinking, and I got free. I'm from Northern Ireland, as I said, during the Troubles. We talked about freedom. We marched in the streets for freedom. We sang about freedom. I wouldn't have known freedom if it jumped up next to me. I'm free tonight. To be able to get in a car, come into Manhattan from Rockaway is a freedom I didn't have before I came to AA. Alcohol was a common denominator in my life. Every decision I made was divided through drink at least once. Is there enough booze to get me there? Enough when I get there? Enough to get me back? And when you live your life under those parameters as we do, your life gets smaller and smaller with less people in it. Today my life's full. I'm not going to stand up here and say, come into AA and everything is wonderful. Life goes on. Life goes up. Life goes down. But we don't drink no matter what. 20 years sober and through a divorce. Almost put my head away. How did I get through it? How do we do things around here? It's a cinch by the inch and it's hard by the yard. And we do it one day at a time. I got through that divorce. My daughter now is 13. I got remarried again in Alcoholics Anonymous. My wife and I had a baby on January 29th. Beautiful baby girl. So if I look, if you see some bags under my eyes, there have been a few sleepless nights recently. But all good stuff. So stay here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Stay here and get sober. And partake in writing your own script. I believe this. I believe it so much. I believe there's a miracle here with your name on it. Nobody can take it from you, and nobody can take it for you. Come up and get the life you're meant to live before drink took you down another road. There's nothing out there for you, only pain, trouble, and misery. As I said there, I want to end on one story. When my daughter was about 6 years old, we're up in Maine, and we're at this amusement park, going on this little Ferris wheel. It was the end of August, a beautiful azure sky, just a hint of autumn in the air, and we're going around this little Ferris wheel, and my 5 or 6 year old daughter, as kids do, totally unprompted, put her hands up in the air and says, Daddy, this is the greatest day of my life, and I love you so much. And I thought to myself, this is what I was looking for in whiskey. And I came this close. But it's not the real deal. I thought to myself, because of whiskey, I almost missed this. The gentleman that's coming out here in a few weeks to talk from California talks about the golden moments that sobriety gives you. Hey, it's given me a lot of golden moments this last 25 years. I just spoke about one there I told you that happened on January 29th, that birth of that beautiful baby. Don't miss your golden moments. Stay sober. Stay here with us. Stay in the lifeboat. Don't swim to shore. Don't get your own. What a great group. Thank you so much for asking me to speak here tonight.